I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, Washington's public schools are so broke that teachers can't even afford scissors. Oh, it's a tragedy. Plus, a historic day at the United States Supreme Court and an arrest made in a significant case of voter fraud in Washington state. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support this little show of ours, the engine that could, at UndividedPod.com, UndividedPod.com. It's just $5 a month. Click on the banner that says support the show. Hello, 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 and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here on this historic day. Thank you so much for your commitment to give common sense a comeback. We are not in D.C. in person, but we are there in spirit for a monumental day in front of the U.S. Supreme Court. Nicole and I have got our, yes, chromosomes, XXXY athletic shirts on. We are so proud of all the women and girls who are in front of the state or United States Supreme Court today to argue for their rights. And this really is one of the civil rights fights of our generation. Our amazing young women from Washington state who have been such important voices in the effort to protect girls' sports, Frances Stout and Annalee Wilson. What a cool thing for them to experience with their families down in D.C. And even I know Annalee Wilson, she's a constituent. Her family are constituents of Congressman Dan Newhouse, and they get one, he gets one guest if he wants to actually go into the United States Supreme Court to hear arguments in person. He brought Annalee Wilson in there with him at 16 years old. What a cool experience for her to be able to be in there hearing arguments, of course, in a case that could finally put an end to the nonsense of boys invading girls' spaces. We're going to have more on that coming up in National, on the arguments, some of the insanity that happened outside the high court today. But we are there with you in spirit, as always. We have a segment on the show today that I think is probably the most important segment we've ever done on this absolute lie and grift from the Washington Education Association, the teachers union, that they need more money for education. It's a lie they tell every single year. Oh my gosh, we're broke. We have no money whatsoever. We need higher taxes. We need to tax the rich. And then they get their buddies, the Democrats, who they get into office through all their campaign donations, through their dues that they funnel to Democrats. And this isn't about helping kids at all. It's not about helping kids at all. It's about lining the pockets of the WEA and its members, period. So I'm going to detail that today for you in a way that I think we haven't done to the extent that we're about to do. So they're the state Washington Education Association Democrats, they're trotting around the state of Washington as the legislative session begins. They're holding these regional town halls. They're calling them town halls about the school funding crisis. This is a picture from one that happened at Newport High School in Bellevue over the weekend. You've got the WEA members handing out signs, raise revenue, fund our schools, raise revenue, fund our schools. Now, not a surprise that you'd have Democrats and the teachers union going out at a time when we know the legislature is going to be talking about increasing taxes and they want a piece of that, you know? If there's more money to be had, they want it. But I think one of the sickest, saddest things that they did at this particular town hall, and we had a spy there. We got spies everywhere, but we had a spy there taking video for us in case the video wasn't going to be posted online. And not only did you have politicians and teachers going out there and talking about the fact that they need more money to fund education. Oh, no, there's no low too low for Democrats and the teachers union. They even trotted out kids to tell sad, sad stories about how their schools have no money.
I'm here to talk about how last winter, my gorgeous school that we're in right now actually ran so low on money that we could not afford to put tissues in our classrooms. And it sounds almost funny until you're sitting in a cold classroom surrounded by sniffles, but your only option is a brown, rough paper towel. People are trying to focus on lessons while dealing with runny noses and irritated skin. And it seems like such a small thing, but these small things add up and they affect how students experience school every day.
Oh, yes. They don't even have money for tissues. They don't even have money for tissues. That's a student at one of the richest school districts in one of the richest places in the state of Washington and really the country complaining that they don't have enough money to have Kleenex in their classrooms. And she says it might sound funny until there's kids sniffling all around you. And if that, you know, didn't tear at your heartstrings quite enough, they trotted out a kid who was even younger than that.
At the beginning of the school year, our class needed scissors for crafts and learning activities. Unfortunately, our classroom didn't have any scissors, so every day we had to borrow them from another class. My teacher would say, "Zaina, can you go borrow the scissors from the room across the hall?" I actually felt happy when she asked, because when I came back, she had smiled at me and say, "You're my superhero." I told my mom about the problem and asked if she could give me a pair of scissors to bring for my teacher. I had already asked, when my mom spoke with the teacher, she learned that the teacher had already asked the PTS for scissors months ago, but they were still on the waiting list. Because of this, my mom decided to join the parent room and help raise money for the other parents so teachers could finally get the supplies they needed. Dana Vanderson, Somerset Elementary School.
We don't even have scissors. Again, one of the richest school districts in the state of Washington. We don't even have scissors. We had to start a fund to make sure all the classrooms have scissors. Meanwhile, the little girl says, "But we borrowed scissors from the class next door, so that class has scissors." Something tells me that the more likely scenario that happened with the scissors is what happens with all of us at home with our scissors, is you misplace your scissors and you can't find them. Then you go buy new ones, then you misplace those, then you go buy new ones, then you misplace those, and then one day you find a drawer full of scissors, and all of a sudden you got like 30 scissors. You're like, "Where'd all these come from?" You find them all at once. I'm sure that her class at some point had scissors. And I don't think that you need to start a fund from parents to pay for scissors. I think somebody can just go ahead and buy the scissors. Now, that being said, that was the prelude for this regional town hall to begin with a video on the screen that featured all the superintendents from the area talking about how dire, can't afford tissues and Kleenex and scissors, how dire the school funding crisis really is.
Washington students deserve a public education that's fully funded, equitable, and sustainable.
Every day, students walk into classrooms built to help them grow and prepare for their futures. But sustaining these environments is getting more difficult without reliable funding, the basics that keep schools running.
I believe strongly that state basic education funding must fully cover the real costs of educating our students. That means funding formulas that reflect today's realities, like salaries and benefits, classroom supplies, curriculum, utilities, insurance, and everything it takes to run safe, high-quality schools.
We need to make sure that we're thinking about the whole child and the fact that their day doesn't just start and stop at the beginning of the day and the end of the school day, and that a half-time student only requires half-time funding.
Across Washington, we are all facing the same challenge. The state's funding for K-12 education still isn't enough to meet student needs. In North Shore, almost 30% of our local levy dollars go just to fill state funding gaps for special education.
When we talk about education funding, we're really talking about the future of our communities. Every dollar we invest in our schools is a dollar invested in opportunity, equity, and innovation.
I want to first begin by thanking the PTAs, school board members, EAs, students, and statewide partners for your continued advocacy to ensure our state lives up to its paramount duty of fully funding K-12 public education.
Well, there you have it from the school superintendents. I guess we can't really argue with them. I mean, what reason would they have to suggest that there's a school funding crisis if there's not a school funding crisis? And I mean, if we've got kids who are saying we can't afford tissues in class, my teacher doesn't have any scissors, and we had to start a fund to be able to get my teacher scissors. I mean, who really would second guess any of them? Gosh, if only there was another place, maybe, that they could find the funds they need to buy scissors and essential supplies like Kleenexes. You know, let's check in on the salaries of the superintendents who were in that video. Dr. John Holman, the Lake Washington school superintendent. Well, he makes $432,000 a year. How about Dan Schlottfeld, the Snoqualmie Valley superintendent? Well, he makes $350,000 a year. How about Dr. Susanna Reyes, the Shoreline superintendent? She makes $345,000 a year. How about Dr. Fred Rundle, the Mercer Island superintendent? He makes $281,000 a year. How about Dr. Justin Irish, the North Shore school superintendent? He makes $392,000 a year. How about Dr. Susan Leach, the Riverview school superintendent? She makes $309,000 a year. How about Dr. Damian Patenaud, the Renton school district superintendent? He makes $429,000 a year. You have school superintendents in these districts whose salaries are on par with the president of the United States, and you have the audacity to trot out 8-year-old kids to complain about the fact that their classroom can't even afford scissors.
Unfortunately, our classroom didn't have any scissors, so every day we have to borrow them from another class.
Are you on to the grift yet? Are you on to the grift yet? That you have Democrats in the teachers' unions trotting around the state saying, we need higher taxes, we need to tax you more because our schools are not fully funded, they can't even afford scissors and Kleenexes. And you have the audacity to have school superintendents who make as much as the president of the United States saying, we need to tax all of you more money to pay for the basics. If that hasn't convinced you of the grift yet, let's continue. And of course, the sob stories just kept going on. And all of this is by design. One of the key things that's happening this year in the legislative session are the two voter initiatives, one to protect girls' sports, one to protect parental rights in education, and to say that no, schools can't keep secrets from parents. If a kid goes to school and they want to be a different gender and be called a different name, you have to let the parent know what's happening with the kids. And Chris Reichdahl, the superintendent of public instruction, who spoke at this regional forum, he knows that he's under scrutiny, increasingly so, for his radical gender ideology and for the fact that they're focused so much on radical gender ideology in schools that our kids have failing grades. Well, who did they choose, not by accident, to introduce Superintendent Chris Reichdahl at this event? Well, a trans student, of course.
As a former teacher and longtime education leader, Superintendent Reichdahl has been a strong advocate for increased state investment in public education. Superintendent Reichdahl's work is grounded in equity, transparency, and a deep belief that every student deserves access to a high-quality public education. We're grateful he's here tonight to listen to students and help us better understand what it will take to fully fund Washington schools in a way that is equitable and sustainable. Please join us in welcoming Superintendent Chris Reichdahl.
Yeah, you gotta pull at those heartstrings, right? Gotta pull at those heartstrings. So of all the students, not an accident that they have a transgender student introduce Chris Reichdahl. So he gets up and he speaks, along with a school funding expert who we'll get to momentarily. But what's interesting is some of their remarks actually underscore the point I'm making. Some of their own remarks, as they're asking for more money, are actually proof that they don't need more money, they need less money. Here's Chris Reichdahl.
We start right here with the birth rate. This is a declining birth rate. Why do you care about this? It's going to get harder to operate schools. It's going to get harder because we have far fewer kids being born today than we are graduating from high school every year. Think of it as 80, 85,000 juniors and seniors, but only 72 or 73,000 5-year-olds entering the system. And as that age cohort occurs, our districts on average are going to keep losing enrollment.
Then they don't need as much money. If you have fewer students, common sense says you need less money, does it not? And he went on to say, well, we still have to, you know, light the buildings. We still have to have, you know, heat the buildings. We still have to have the school buses and all that. No, well, eventually, if you have fewer and fewer students, you can have fewer and fewer schools. That's just a reality. You're not going to keep every single school in the state open if the schools are half full. So he's making the point there, declining enrollment. Yet you want more money. And that's been the case for years on end. Points that we'll illustrate with facts momentarily. But then they bring in this guy called Dan Steele. He's with the Washington Association of School Administrators. Again, the administrators are the ones that their pockets are being padded with all of this. So not a surprise that the guy with the Washington Association of School Administrators would come on and try to make a case about the fact that they need more money for education. And he's upset. Figure this one out. He's upset that, oh my gosh, well, state spending is ballooning, but school spending isn't ballooning at the same rate.
Over the last 12 years, when the McCleary decision, when the Supreme Court came forward and said that the state wasn't amply funding the K-12 education as they're constitutionally required to, you can see the K-12 education over the last 12 years has actually increased pretty dramatically. In fact, when we go to the legislature and say, we need more, we need this, we need that, they say, well, your budgets have increased by over 50%. What more do you want? Well, again, if you look at the second set of the overall budget, you can see how much more the state budget has grown than the K-12 budget. So putting in actual numbers, over the last 12 years, the increase in K-12 budgets has been about 120%. the overall increase of the state budget is 130%. The problem is legislators are prioritizing things other than K-12 education, or more than K-12 education, which is the only state's paramount duty of the state. Well, the problem is we're not amply funded, and as we try to get more money, other areas of the state government are continuing to get more than K-12 education is.
Interesting. Now, we can agree on that point, that I think the state is spending money on a bunch of things it shouldn't spend money on, like laser hair removal for transgender prison inmates and boob jobs for transgender prison inmates and an office of equity that spends like $9 million a year on what? Nobody really knows. But you're telling me that your complaint is that the state of Washington's budget grew 130% and yours only grew 120%? Washington state's budget is outpacing inflation by three times. It's outpacing population growth by nine times. So both of your budgets are growing too much too fast. And so you might be angry that the state budget grew 130% and your budget only grew 120%. But the reality is, and the numbers show, both of your budgets grew too damn much. Both of your spending and your revenue grew too damn much. So we, you know, go back to the beginning where they're talking about kids and having trotting them out in front of parents who can't think for themselves, don't have a brain. And the kids are saying, we can't afford Kleenexes and we can't afford scissors in our classroom. Right now in the state of Washington, according to the Office of Superintendent of Public Instruction, we're spending $19,347 per pupil. That's how much money per pupil. That's how much tax money is going to each student in the state of Washington. $19,347. And you're telling me that that's not enough to make sure that classrooms have basic supplies? I think we're all smarter than that, right? Not to mention that that number has increased exponentially. Some other charts that I think you'll find interesting. In 2010, we were spending less than $10,000 per pupil in the state of Washington. Less than $10,000. That grew to $12,600 in 2016. And now it's nearly $20,000 per student in the state of Washington. That's double. It's doubled in 15 years. And you're telling me you still can't afford to make sure every classroom has a working pair of scissors and some Kleenex? I call bullshit, as would most sane people. Here's another thing that's grown. The number of total employees in K through 12 schools. It's grown exponentially. It was 102,000 in 2010. Now it's 123,000. Most of those, I should note, aren't even teachers. More than half of employees of public schools aren't even teachers. And it's grown 102,000 to 123,000. Now you might say, well, Brandy, population growth, 20,000 additional employees across the state, that doesn't seem like such a big deal, except enrollment has declined. Enrollment is on the decline. In 2020, it was 1.1 million. I mean, it's declined quite a bit since the beginning of the pandemic. And in fact, it's on par with enrollment in 2010. Our enrollment now is almost the exact same as what school enrollment was in 2010, 15 years ago. Yet you've added teachers, you've added staff members, you're now spending almost double the amount you were spending per student in 2010, and your budget has ballooned at a time when you have fewer students. So the amount of students not growing, but the amount of teachers is growing, the amount of administrators is growing, your budget is growing, the amount we spend per pupil is growing. It's almost as if there is no correlation whatsoever between the number of students and the amount we spend. It's almost as if there's no correlation whatsoever between the amount we spend and the outcomes, because we know test scores are getting worse and worse and worse. It's almost as if the more money we spend, the worse our public education system gets. It's almost as if, I don't know, spitballing here, you're just using that money to pad the pockets of your members, because teacher pay has risen exponentially over that period of time, from about $90,000 a year on average to $128,000 a year on average. So student learning isn't improving. Enrollment isn't improving. But it's creating, you know what isn't improving? More jobs for the WEA. More teacher jobs means more money into the union, the primary union that funds Democrats. And then you have school superintendents who expect all of us to approve new taxes who are making as much as the President of the United States. It's almost as if, hold on. It's my scalp that my spy got for me. It's almost as if, let me explain this to you like a third grade teacher, that we don't need to raise revenue to fund our schools. It's almost as if we could fund our schools with the money we already have. Scene. Absolutely insane. We can't afford Kleenexes and scissors. Well, you have school superintendents who are making $429,000 a year. If there are people dumb enough to believe that, then you are dumb enough to believe anything. Outrageous. All right, we got some updates on stories to get to next. First, remember, if you are a landlord in the state of Washington, the legislative session is a critical time of year for you because this is usually when Democrats get together and come up with all sorts of bad ideas to make your life miserable. But the Rental Housing Association of Washington, our wonderful show sponsors, they are down in Olympia advocating on your behalf, but they can't do that without a robust member base. So if you want to become a member of the Rental Housing Association of Washington, you can do that today. RHAWA.org, RHAWA.org. Not only will they help you navigate the complex world of policies and rules and regulations if you run into any issues, but then, of course, they are your eyes and ears and your voices down in Olympia. RHAWA.org, Washington's trusted resource, empowering housing providers. All right, so the legislative session is now underway. We're going to have quite a bit of coverage of stuff that's happening down there. But it is very clear the narrative that Democratic leadership is already spinning. So as you know, I went to this legislative preview on Friday, and there was a panel with the leadership. So the Republican leadership for the House and the Senate, and the Republican leadership or in the Democratic leadership in the House and the Senate. And the panel begins, and the moderator, who was a reporter for the Seattle Times, asks the panelists a very simple question. You know, what is the biggest priority for your caucuses this session? And she directed that question at everyone. Here's what Speaker of the House Lori Jenkins said.
I think the 2026 session, we definitely start off with some pretty significant headwinds. Most significantly, the harmful policies that have been passed by the federal administration, the federal government, and the attacks of the federal government on states like Washington. I think, you know, President Trump's tariffs are causing much higher inflation in the state. They're causing a lot of uncertainty because they go back and forth daily, so there's no way for our business community to really plan for or around them. And they're causing greater prices for our families here in Washington state. So everything from food to clothing to furniture to cars to lumber, you name it.
Okay. I will gouge out my eyeballs and cut off my ears if I have to hear one more Democrat say that President Trump is the one that's hurting businesses in Washington state. A year after our state just passed the largest package of tax increases in state history, much of that on the backs of businesses. So it's outrageous, but this isn't a surprise, right? What they want to do is distract from the real issues facing Washington, the issues that have been getting worse and worse by the year, and the issues that existed before President Trump, during the Biden administration, and will continue to exist after President Trump's second term is over. And they do this because voters here, for some odd reason, maybe the same voters who believe that we need more money to fund our public schools, they hate Donald Trump so much that they'll just believe it blindly, totally blindly. Yeah, you're right. Go down there and fight President Donald Trump. None of this is your fault. And Senator Jamie Peterson, who's the leading Democrat in the state Senate, he gave basically the same answer about what his caucus's top priority will be.
Our priorities are in the Senate Democratic Caucus are largely aligned with what you heard from the speaker. I would say, number one, we are going to do everything that we can to protect people in our state from a really malevolent, hostile federal government. And, you know, aside from the tariffs and all of the bad effects on the economy, we see attacks on immigrants, really weaponization of the military and the National Guard to oppress people all over the country. We see attacks on transgender people all over the country. We see attacks on science and on research. So we're going to be looking for every opportunity that we can to make sure that vulnerable people are protected, to make sure that science and healthcare are protected. Including supporting the West Coast Health Alliance and the scientifically based standards in terms of vaccines.
Oh, yes. Science is under attack. This coming from the same guy who told me that he didn't have the credentials to be able to say for sure whether boys are different from girls. Got it. The issue is that there is this barrier, and I don't think anything in the state of Washington will change until we can somehow break through that barrier. There is this barrier where anything attached to the bad orange man in the White House, it just poisons everything. It poisons the well. And it has been very politically advantageous for people like Speaker Jenkins and Senate Majority Leader Peterson to just blame Donald Trump. And then they're off the hook for this massive self-induced budget crisis we're in. They're off the hook for passing the largest tax increase in state history into law. They're off the hook for the crime crisis, for the drug crisis, for the homeless crisis. They're off the hook scot-free for all of these things that have demonstrably made Washington State a worse place to live, a less affordable place to live, a more dangerous place to live, because it really is as simple as just saying the name Donald Trump. And all reason, logic, and common sense goes right out the window. And then you have the answers from the Republican Party to that same question. And I got to say, I struggle with this. I struggle so much because as an independent, I don't belong to the Republican Party. But when I hear these answers, so they gave the answers on our top priority is fighting Donald Trump. And then I hear the answer that I'm about to play from House minority leaders, the ranking Republican in the state house, Drew Stokesbury. And I just think, how can any sane person disagree with this?
Washington State House Republicans are going to be focused on this Washington far more than the other Washington. We ran to represent our constituents in this Washington, not the other Washington. Tariffs don't explain why Washington has the second highest gas price of any state in the country. Tariffs don't explain why Washington has the fourth highest grocery prices of any state in the country. Tariffs don't explain why Washington has the fourth highest housing prices of any state in the country. Tariffs don't explain why Washington has the seventh most costly child care of any state in the country, or the third highest cost of living of any state in the country. Washington is uniquely expensive compared to nearly every other state. That is not a result of the federal policies. Federal policies don't target Washington. Washington state's policies target Washington. It is a result of decades of single-party governance that has resulted in Washington becoming more and more unaffordable.
Boom. Straight fire. And all of it's true. You can't argue with any of it. But then one mention of Trump, bad. In all of that, you're willing to just push aside. And I think that's peak privilege. I think that is peak privilege. Washington State has a lot of white, highly educated individuals who are wealthy, who don't have a care in the world, who are wealthy because of capitalism, I will say, who don't have a care in the world. And so they cling to, they don't have to worry really about the cost of gas. They don't have to worry about the crushing B&O taxes on small businesses. They're in gated communities. They don't have to worry about the crime crisis. They can find detours around the homeless crisis. They don't have to see it. And around the sad images of people shooting fentanyl into their arms in downtown Seattle. So they can distance themselves from those issues, but they still want to cling to something and feel righteous and virtue signal, so it's Donald Trump. Like, honestly, how privileged is that? That you can afford to be so spun up about Donald Trump and go to the No Kings protests and blame everything on Donald Trump while poor and middle class people suffer under the policies of the party that you've put in power. And look, I'm not saying, I don't know what our state would look like if we had Republican leadership. But I know that the only thing worse than two-party rule is one-party rule. And you have one party that can essentially get away with anything it wants. And that is so unhealthy and so destructive. And just the mention of the word Trump, and they're off the hook for all the people who've been killed in the crime crisis, all the people who've been killed in the drug crisis, all the people living in filth and squalor on our streets. And what also kills me about that is the fact that we have such a highly educated state. You have these highly educated elites who act so stupid and who vote so stupidly. In who are so easily fooled and distracted by the occupant of the White House. Nothing will change in our state until we can fix that mindset. All right, an update for you. I told you on the show yesterday about, so I had, you know, went down to Olympia and questioned Senate Majority Leader Peterson about, can you acknowledge that there are biological differences between boys and girls? And he said no. And our friend Corey DeAngelis, who's a school choice advocate, posted that clip. And as you know, there was an individual who commented on it. May there be Tyler Robinson's for you all. That's the person who assassinated Charlie Kirk. So because I'm questioning and Corey DeAngelis, we think that there are differences between boys and girls, we deserve to be assassinated just like Charlie Kirk. And the reason why this was notable is Mara Mahan, biological man, is a research scientist at the University of Washington. So we've got a researcher at a publicly funded university in Seattle who is saying, I deserve to be assassinated just like Charlie Kirk. So we had reached out yesterday to the University of Washington because this story went pretty viral. It's all over the place. And they locked down the Fuller Lab where this individual does their research at. They made their website password protected. They basically took it down for anyone external from the University of Washington. This individual scrubbed and deleted all their social media pages. And so, you know, it kind of went bananas. The University of Washington sent us a statement. I will say it took them a little while to respond to us, much longer than normal. But Victor Bolta, the spokesperson for the UW, said UW Medicine denounces violence against all people and takes seriously the concerns reported to us regarding this matter. We are reviewing the specifics of this situation, including a detailed review of the facts, university policy, and the law, and will determine next steps. Now, as I said, and I appreciate them sending us a message and denouncing violence against all people, do I think that they will do anything? No. And to be fair, I don't believe that this individual did anything criminal. I said that on the show yesterday because I've dealt with these things a lot. And there is a pretty clear line between, sometimes it seems blurry, but it's not, between a death threat and basically a First Amendment protection that you wish someone would die or you wish someone would be assassinated. And while it's vile to wish that somebody would be assassinated or to hope for that, that is protected by the First Amendment. And as I said yesterday, if not, I would have called the police and I would have reported it as a death threat, as I have done in other instances. So I don't think there's anything criminal here, but there's of course the question about, should the University of Washington and UW Medicine, publicly funded entities, employ someone who wants anyone who believes that boys aren't girls to be assassinated just like Charlie Kirk? My opinion on that is no. And I do believe that there are rules and codes of conduct that govern employees at UW Medicine and the University of Washington as public institutions. So we'll see what happens here. I mean, they say that they're doing a detailed review of the facts. Well, the facts are pretty clear. That's what he posted on a video. Very clear what he meant by that. So the facts are pretty clear. I don't know what they have to investigate there, but then they're going to look into university policy and the law. I don't think that they violated the law, so it really comes down to university policy. I don't believe that this person should have a job at the University of Washington anymore. And honestly, I don't know why the University of Washington would want someone who so freely talks about and urges political assassination. Don't you guys like hate guns and want to keep schools safe and stuff? Is that really a person who's safe for your environment? I don't think so. So we'll see what happens, and we're going to continue to follow up with the University of Washington until we get some sort of definitive answer as to whether Mara Mahan will keep his her job. All right, coming up next, a pretty significant case of election fraud in Washington state and an actual arrest. How often does that happen? We talk about fraud, concerned about fraud, and actual arrests. They can't say fraud doesn't happen. First, our friends at Valentine Roofing have been awarded the best roofing company in the Pacific Northwest for 3 years in a row. I had a fantastic experience with them. They came over to our house after the storms that were happening and cleaned out our gutters and checked our roof because we'd had some neighbors whose homes were built around the same time as us, whose roofs failed during the atmospheric river. Was that what it was called? But they said, hey, your roof actually looks pretty good. So it was a little peace of mind there, but our gutters definitely need to be cleaned. But meticulous service and cleanup, so they were just fantastic. If you need a new roof, maybe your attic isn't properly insulated, which this time of year, you can lose a lot of heat out of your attic and through your roof. And right now, Valentine is offering 10% off if you bundle attic insulation with any new roof. So that's a pretty good deal. And they have exceptional financing options that are built around your budget. So call our friends at Valentine for a free estimate, 206-ROOFING, 206-ROOFING. Make sure to tell them that you heard about them right here on Undivided. All right, a case of election fraud in Franklin County, and there's actually been an arrest. Let's talk about it in our segment, Unbelievable. Boop. All right. So this case takes us to Franklin County, specifically to Pasco, Washington. There was a press release put out by the sheriff of Franklin County. I'm just going to read it to you because it explains sort of what happened in this case. It has to do with fraud perpetrated during the 2024 general election. So it says, detectives were advised back in October by the prosecuting attorney of an irregular Franklin County ballot that was counted in the 2024 general election. Through an extensive investigation, detectives learned an individual moved from Pasco to Oregon and properly registered to vote there. However, a Washington ballot was sent to her previous address. The ballot sent to her previous Pasco address was also filled out, sent to the auditor's office, and counted in the election. Detectives also discovered three additional ballots sent to the same apartment building had suspicious characteristics. Apartment manager Esperanza Contreras, 52, of Pasco, was identified as a suspect in taking possession of these four ballots, which were sent to former tenants. She then completed the ballots, signed the envelopes fraudulently, and submitted them to the auditor's office. Three of four ballots were confirmed to have been counted in the election, with the fourth being rejected due to a mismatched signature. So that person who moved out, moved to Oregon, properly registered there, but then they found out, oh, my vote also counted in Washington. What the hell happened there? Well, the apartment manager was just taking ballots that hadn't been picked up, filling them out and sending it in. Contreras was interviewed by detectives, at which time she admitted to voting all four ballots and forging the signatures. She was booked, placed under arrest, booked into the Franklin County Jail for 12 felony charges. Love that. Love that for us. 12 felony charges related to voter fraud and identity theft. They say voter fraud undermines the integrity of the electoral process and erodes public confidence in the fairness of elections. The Franklin County Sheriff's Office takes violations of election law seriously and remains committed to thoroughly investigating and pursuing election-related violation. And they're asking for anyone with additional information regarding the case or who may believes the suspect might be involved in additional voter fraud activity to contact their office. Now, a couple things here. This is good news. So I've said I'm not a believer in widespread voter fraud. Like, I don't believe the 2020 election was stolen. But that doesn't mean that there aren't clear voting irregularities or a lot of opportunities for fraud. And that's really what I'm most concerned about, is opportunities for fraud where someone who wants to cheat in elections has an opportunity to do so. And we hear a lot of stories like this at apartments where just stacks of ballots end up in the mailroom because people have moved or whatever it is. We hear a lot about this in like highly immigrant communities, the Chinatown International District. We have individuals who might, you know, not be living here anymore or were registered when they got a driver's license, you know, weren't really fully aware of the process and didn't even know they got a ballot sent to them. So then you've got these stacks of ballots. Now, it's not fraud until you fill it out. You know, just getting a ballot that you're not supposed to get or, you know, moving out of state and getting a ballot for two places, not fraud until you fill it out. But the opportunities for fraud in our state are very concerning. Now, it's good news to hear an example of someone who is going to be held accountable, hopefully, for their behavior. But it doesn't change the fact that this is a problem that is exclusive to mail-in voting. And I have been a firm defender of mail-in voting. I like it. I like the convenience of it, but I'm also not trying to cheat in an election. I'm going to fill out one ballot and send it in. But you don't have a situation where you could do this with in-person voting, and that just is the truth. And I think if Democrats did a better job at acknowledging that, yes, there is some chain of custody issues with mail-in voting, there are far more opportunities for fraud with mail-in voting. And if they talked about that and were honest and wanted to actually engage in conversations about how they could better eliminate opportunities for fraud, I think that you'd have fewer people who really believe that elections were being stolen. But in this case, you know, one person, four ballots. What was the Commissioner of Public Lands race? I mean, the separation in that was like a couple dozen votes or something in the primary. And so, I mean, look at the 2004, you know, famous gubernatorial election that Dino Lossi won, then lost, then won, then lost. So, yeah, four ballots can make a difference. There's local races that come down to single digits. And even Elon Musk shared a story about this that came out about the apartment manager. He just said, wow. But it got a lot of national attention, certainly. And so it's good when fraud is caught. But the problem with our system is it relies on someone reporting it. And that seems to be the case in what happened here. It was this individual who moved to Oregon and then somehow realized that their ballot counted in Washington and reported it to the prosecuting attorney's office. So the only time that you can really catch someone, and this is the same for illegal aliens voting. And we had the Secretary of State on the show and we talked about this at length. Our state is basically a scout's honor system, where you attest to being a legal resident or legally able to vote, and then you get a ballot. And yes, if they decide to mail that ballot in, that's fraud, but only if somebody catches it, only if someone reports it. So I'm sure there's a lot of instances of people who aren't supposed to vote voting. I'm sure there are more instances than this of people seeing some ballots laying around and deciding, I'm going to cast those ballots for my candidate. And I'm going to forge some signatures. So, yeah, I mean, maybe I'm wearing down on the vote by mail system, but it's undeniable that there's more opportunities for fraud. And I think very few of the cases of fraud actually get adjudicated where someone ends up behind bars. 12 felonies, I would hope that given the attention this case is receiving, that this individual doesn't just get a slap on the wrist. But we shall see. All right. Coming up next in National, we're going to talk about this U.S. Supreme Court hearing that's happening on whether boys should be allowed to participate in girls' sports. First, are we in a tech bubble? Are we in an AI bubble? Are you concerned about how the future of AI might impact your retirement? If you have questions about any of that, sign up for Zach Abraham's New Year Reset live webinar. It's happening January 29th, 3:30 p.m. Pacific. During it, Zach is going to discuss the impact AI could have on the 2026 market, how Bulwark Capital is focused on risk management, and how they incorporate value-based principles in managing retirement portfolios. Plus, they'll do a full reveal of how Bulwark is always looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, give your retirement as much upside as possible. And Nicole and I both had a little chat with Zach yesterday about our retirements and sort of concerns about AI and everything that's going on. So he's just really great at sort of walking you through his feelings on all of that, how they've been able to outperform the market so well. So sign up for Bulwark Capital's free New Year Reset live webinar at knowyourriskpodcast.com. While you're there, you can also schedule your own Know Your Risk portfolio review and subscribe to Zach's daily market recap at knowyourriskpodcast.com. All of it at knowyourriskpodcast.com. All right, historic day, as I said, in front of SCOTUS. And I just love to see, I got a bunch of pictures from Annalee and Francis's families today. What a cool experience for them. To be outside the United States Supreme Court and all the who's who that have been fighting to protect girls sports were there. Riley Gaines was there. XXXY Athletics was there. America First Policy Institute, Athletes for America, the LGB Courage Coalition, Democrats for an Informed Approach to Gender. Everyone was there. Very cool to see both Francis and Annalee get that opportunity. And also, I think that our members of Congress have been very nice in giving them some tours of the Capitol and things like that. So that's just an awesome experience for them. I will tell you, Nicole and I were going to go, but we were just on that extended vacation. Then my dog's having surgery today as we speak. They've got her filleted, her little leg. I just am so scared for her. Anyway, enough about me. So the case that's happening, they're hearing arguments, and already heard arguments today, in cases from Idaho and West Virginia, where lower courts have blocked state laws that prohibit transgender athletes from playing on female teams. So basically, you've got red states that say no dudes in girls' sports, and the ACLU led lawsuits to challenge those policies. And what the ACLU is really seeking for SCOTUS to do here is water down the definition of gender. And I would like to think that this particular Supreme Court is not going to do that. I would really like to believe that they're not going to do that. And I do think ultimately their ruling, when it comes, you know, several months from now, will be the victory that we've all been waiting for sanity. But then there's some, you know, things that come up that just, I mean, you've got Ketanji Brown Jackson, obviously, on the U.S. Supreme Court. This is the woman who, during her confirmation hearings, couldn't answer the question about what a woman is because she said she's not a biologist. So she, we already know, if she's not a biologist and she can't tell you the difference between a man and a woman, then she's definitely not going to side with Republicans on this one. She, during the hearing and arguments today, she pushed back at red states treating people different on the basis of biology.
We're indifferent to a person's gender identity in applying the law.
But the law, but the law actually operates differently, I think, for cisgender women and transgender women. That is, with respect to their desire to play on a team that matches their gender identity, cisgender women can do it, transgender women cannot.
Because they're not
and
women.
And so we do appreciate a distinction, I think, that is being drawn on the basis of your gender status, gender identity status, trans or cis, right?
What does that even mean?
So, and I want to make sure I understand if we're operating in Title IX world or equal protection world, because I think it might make a difference to the answer. But
Let's start with Title IX.
So Title IX, I think the question of, I look at this statute and see a distinction between boy and girl indifferent to gender identity. And I think that...
Right, but I'm testing that proposition, right? You see that distinction, and I see it too on the separation of teams level at the beginning.
Right, and I think what I'm hearing is that that distinction arises from a difference in effect, and I don't see a disparate impact analysis that's sort of hidden away in Title IX.
But why is that a difference in effect? So it's like a second order discrimination, right? The first order is separating male from female.
Right.
The second order is separating transgender women from cisgender women, right?
Respectfully, I would disagree, Your Honor. The reason why is just because I think anytime you have a classification, you could divide it into subclassifications, and I don't think that then becomes, like, the law in the same way applies to brown-haired biological girls and blonde-headed biological girls.
I understand, but I don't think...
Yeah, it's all just nonsense. It sounds literally like a different language. And not a surprise from her, but I also saw reports that Amy Coney Barrett was using the phrase trans girls. No, they're boys. They're boys. Do not give in to the captured language. Trans girls, you're supposed to look at things from a factual perspective. So it kind of freaks me out that Amy Coney Barrett seems to be falling into that ploy as well. So red state governors had put together a letter and sent it to SCOTUS, to the court, showing their support for the two states whose policies are being challenged here. That effort was led by Montana Governor Greg Gianforte.
I was very proud to lead an effort with Republican governors to make our voice heard, to say, listen, let's let women play on women's teams. Let's let men play on men's team, just to weigh in as the Supreme Court hears these arguments. That's an important hearing. They won't make a ruling tomorrow, but they're going to hear oral arguments, and we'll get a decision later this year. I think common sense is going to prevail. We want to make sure we weighed in for women and girls so that they have an opportunity to compete fairly.
Yeah, I agree. And look, you can make up any class of people and say they deserve rights. And that's really what the trans movement has been about, is kind of making up this class of people and saying, oh, they have civil rights. It's like, no, we all have civil rights, but I don't get to come in and say, oh, you know, fake blondes, you know. Oh, people who dye their hair blonde should have special protections, and I should be able to get special privileges over natural blondes. Like, that doesn't make any sense. You can't just say, carve out a little space for yourself and say, I deserve special civil rights. It's like, nah, you deserve the same rights as everyone else, and your rights can't trample on other people's rights. So I really hope that the U.S. Supreme Court, I mean, it took a while to get this issue before the court. It's kind of stupid that we even have to have it. Like, isn't that stupid? That the most powerful court on the planet is going to be deciding whether boys are the same as girls? Is going to be deciding whether boys can compete in girls' sports? And if that's what they decide, then just get rid of the gender designation altogether. Let's just be one human race, genderless, and have everybody just compete in the same athletics. See how that goes. No women's basketball, just basketball. No men's tennis, just tennis. Let's see how that goes for women. It'll set us back 50 years. Stupid. One really quick thing I want to address. It's going to be the subject of a story we do tomorrow on the show, but just to put it on your radar. So Washington State isn't the only state that's thinking about taxing the rich. I mean, we already have here, right? We passed a capital gains tax, a carve out, and now they're looking at, and we'll probably pass a millionaire's tax. And we're doing a segment tomorrow about this issue of capital flight. To what extent is there capital flight when you pass a tax that specifically targets one group of people, one specific subset of capital? And we know what the answer is. And we knew what happened in Washington State after the capital gains tax. And the same thing is happening right now in California. So they're trotting out this proposed billionaire tax. Geez, here it's just millionaires. There, they're like billionaires. I mean, that's a little better, right? It's a little better, but it's still bad.
They have more billionaires. That's why.
Well, yes, they probably have more billionaires. I mean, but probably not by a lot.
We one have, more billionaires than us.
I'm sure you're correct, but it can't be by much. But, you know, we have lost a billionaire recently, and I'm sure that we're going to lose more billionaires to other states who are fleeing. But look, this isn't rocket science. The same thing is happening there. The billionaires are fleeing to dodge it. They think, okay, you're going to pass a billionaire tax. Well, geez, there's 49 other states in the union. Most of those don't have a billionaire's tax, so I'll just take all my money, all the tax revenue that goes along with it, and I'll leave. Like the In-N-Out heiress, the founder of PayPal, the founder, co-founder of Google, they're all doing it. So California's proposed Billionaire Tax Act could appear on the state's November ballot, and it would impose a one-time tax on its wealthiest residents. Yeah, I'm sure it'll be a one-time tax. Great. The measure would slap the 5% tax on individual fortunes exceeding $1 billion and be applied retroactively to residents in the state as of... Here it is. That's messed up. Retroactively. So if they haven't left already...
Yeah.
And that's why they left before.
That's why they were leaving last year,
because they knew this was coming.
Yep.
But isn't that kind of messed up? It's like, oh, because that... Why else would you do that? First of all, you say there's no capital flight. Why else would you do that if you weren't expecting that people would leave? So even if they pass it in November, and let's say you decided to leave today, you'd still be hit with it. So because they know that people are going to flee. Oh my God, it's so obvious. The looming deadline is giving California's roughly 2,015 billionaires... There's 2,015 billionaires in California. I don't know. This article didn't put a comma, so I'm very confused by it.
Because from the data I'm looking at, Washington State has about 8 to 13 billionaires, and California has 200 to 250 is what I've just
Googled. Then why do they say 2,015 in this article? But they don't put a comma. I think it's a typo. The tax would cover worldwide assets such as businesses, stocks, bonds, art collectibles, and intellectual property, but would exclude directory-held real estate, pensions, and retirement accounts. Individuals who are California residents as of January 1st, 2026 would be subject to the tax even if they move out of state before the election. Just stupid. So we're going to punish you for moving out of state. So you're already going to be subjected to the tax. And then if you don't move out of state, you're obviously still being punished as well, which is really interesting. So they're going to treat the billionaires who stay in state and decide they want to pay the tax the same as the billionaires who flee the state, which is almost not fair to the billionaires who decide to stay in the state and pay the tax. But then the ones that flee, it's not just, you know, maybe they get stuck with this one-time 5% tax, but then all the money they take with them, all of the capital they take with them, they're not paying property taxes anymore, they're not paying sales taxes anymore, they're not paying income taxes anymore, and they're taking all of that money to some other state. And then it's going to be a net loss for the state of California, but they're just too dumb to see it. Sounds a lot like Washington State. So I asked you guys a show poll question, subscribers, a couple weeks ago that was very similar to this, but I made this one more specific for a reason. So I think before our holiday break, I had asked you guys a poll question about if Washington State passes an income tax, will you leave the state? And most of you are like, yeah, I would. But specifically what we're talking about this year in Washington is a millionaire tax. So I asked subscribers on Patreon, Locals and X, will you leave Washington State if Democrats pass an income tax strictly on those making more than $1 million a year? Yes or no? So let's just assume right now that that's what they do, is they make it on $1 million a year. Would you up and leave?
Yep, I'm out of here. No. No, no, probably not. My job's here.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't leave, but I also wouldn't be affected by the tax the first year.
Right.
But if it gets to the point where it, because they're going to lower it, that's what's going to happen. We talked about that. They're going to lower it and lower it. So the second it applies to me, I'm gone.
Yeah.
The second it applies to me, I'm gone. So 70% of you said no for now. You wouldn't just up and move. I imagine that we don't have too many millionaires who subscribe to our show, although I'm sure we have a couple.
A few.
I think we got a few. And you should be presidential patrons, of course. Exactly. If you're making $1 million a year, rather than pay that money to the government, you can give me $2,700 a year to be a presidential patron. I think that sounds like a hell of a deal. And I'll fight against the bad tax policy for you. Anyway, let's see. Lisa Russell, we want to leave now because of many reasons, but not because of that one thing. So I voted no. Carly said, I wish I could move. There's too many factors keeping me here. Man, I will say the pull to Florida feels nicer by the day. Feels nicer by the day, but I can't abandon you guys. I cannot abandon the state I love.
Unless they start taxing us.
Right. Unless you pass an income tax on us.
See you later.
I mean, look, you know, the thing is that the way that my business is structured, let's say that our show takes off in the next 2 or 3 years and the revenue is more than $1 million a year. You think I'm going to pay that? Absolutely not. I mean, I would love to be in a position where the show is making more than $1 million a year.
We could do the show from Idaho, right on the other side of the border. That's and true. Still do the show.
Well, we'll do the show in Idaho, and then we'll have our we'll just cross over like once a day into the other and do the live hit from there and then head back to the studio.
There you go.
Something like that. Let's see. Spencer, I want out of here because of all the other issues. This just adds to them. Small town mom, I said no, but that is for now. My kids really like their school and community, so we're trying to get them to graduation. But we'll see if our jobs can stay here. That might force us to move earlier than we planned. I hear that from a lot of parents. As soon as my kids graduate, I'm done. And I totally appreciate that, wanting to, you know, let your kids stay in their school until they graduate and then deciding to move. I hear a ton of parents doing that. Cynthia said, pretty sure there's a 99% chance I will never leave Washington. I will die here. It's easy to say you'll leave, but it's very hard to make it happen. You know who doesn't have a hard time leaving? The rich people who are going to be subjected to the tax. It's very easy for them to pick up and leave. And then that means they're not going to get the revenue that they're expecting. And so who's going to have to pick up the pieces? All of us, the middle class, the lower class, upper middle class, everyone except the millionaires and the billionaires. All right, we'll get to our closing sanity check. Coming, am I missing something? Comments, okay, I'm waiting for comments. We'll get to comments, sorry, I was like, I know I'm skipping past something. We'll get to comments coming up next. First, if you're thinking about selling your home, maybe to move out of state, I don't know, reach out to our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. Wes and his team have an innovative marketing strategy to make sure that you get the most possible value out of your home. And that's really what we all want, right? But you might say, well, I've got some cosmetic upgrades I know I need. Oh my God, I don't want to pay for those. Well, Wes and his team can help you out. Wes loves doing that. He's the son of a builder, and so he loves a good project. He can come in, manage any upgrades. He's going to make sure you know the upgrades that are worth it and the ones that aren't worth it, that you'll get the money from on the back end. And he can even arrange it so you don't have to pay for the upgrades until closing, which I think is a really cool service. So reach out to Wes Jones, as so many Undivided viewers and listeners have, to sell their home. Sellwithwes.com. Sellwithwes.com. It really is just a better way to sell your home. All right, comments from the live stream on the historic SCOTUS hearing today. Matt says, does this just allow states to ban trans athletes, or does it ban trans athletes? So the Supreme Court could be more broad and all-encompassing in its ruling. It really decides how the U.S. Supreme Court decides to rule. But the cases are about whether individual states can have bans on trans athletes. So if they decide to keep it very narrow, then it would say, yes, individual states can ban trans athletes. And so then it wouldn't have any impact on Washington State, because our state leaders aren't going to ban boys from participating in girls' athletics unless voters decide to do it in November. But they could decide to make a point and make a broader point about Title IX protections and all of that. So we'll just have to wait to see what SCOTUS does. Dan B., boys and girls sports shouldn't even be a thing, let alone having Democrats lawfully challenging title protections. I agree. My nose itches.
So when you threw your poster there, it hit my camera. So that's why I'm
Sorry, I got really aggressive.
I am here, but hi.
Nicole's here. I apologize. I threw my poster at her camera earlier. On schools begging for money, Allison Griffin says, my son's school is Bush Middle School, told kids yesterday that parents will have to take their students to all away basketball games because they don't have money for transportation. It's bullshit. That's so ridiculous. Of course they have money for transportation. Give me a break. Van Redding, my wife did the finances for one of our prisons and now a rural school. They fully fund prison, but not school is in our state. If you asked her, she could lay it out for you. Well, that's very interesting.
Oh, they fund prisons and then some.
Well, they don't fund the important stuff in prisons, but they'll get you a boob job if you want one. I'm telling you, I'm going to go to prison for a day and get a boob job. Those are expensive.
Not a bad idea.
They'll come back with just these. It'll be very high and tight. You know, very perky. I'll be like, we got him in prison. What'd you do in prison, Brandy? How was prison? How do you think it was?
I mean, the first thing, if anything happens and we're protesting and get arrested, as soon as we get there, medical attention, please.
Yes, medical attention. At least I know if I have to suffer through prison in the state of Washington, if my political enemies put me in prison, at least I know I can get a boob job.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Van or Papa Woody. This sounds like Sean Scott's getting his Cuban wish. Only our kids can't read. Yeah. Moon Goddess, isn't this why there's a supplies list given to parents each year? Aren't the supplies needed provided by the parents each year? I brought my own. Yeah, I mean, that's your kids' supplies, right? Where you get a list of things your kids should buy.
Yes, which usually include scissors. And then in addition to that, they usually say, are you trying to fix my camera?
I just feel like the people need you today.
Okay. Almost there. There I am.
Sorry about that. So I got really aggressive and threw things earlier.
I remember being in school, and occasionally you would have to bring one box of Kleenexes with you, and that was just the thing. It was part of your list, and everybody in the classroom contributed. It wasn't a big deal.
Yeah,
they're making that into a big deal. Well, if the first thing you cut is Kleenexes when all of those salaries are bloated like that, then give me a break. And then, when they say the population's going down, but we still need the same teachers. No. Actually, you move classes, you combine classes, you need less teachers.
Yeah. And you close schools. And I know no parent likes to have their kids' school closed, but if you've got a situation where the population's declining, enrollment is declining, and you don't need a school, then taxpayers shouldn't have to pay for it. Sorry, that's just, it's a hard truth. Makes no sense. It's like he wants the same amount of funding, no matter how many kids are enrolled in public school. That's what he's actually saying. Yeah. He's saying, we want more funding no matter how many kids are enrolled in public school. Because you want to be able to pay your superintendents $500,000 a year. Give me a break.
It's
all right. The Twiston side. My son's school sent out a message about an hour ago asking for tissues. Will you please send us that?
Yes, please.
All right. Wall leader is obsessed with Trump. Lockman, you too. Lies. Washington state government is responsible for our inflation in our state. And Drew Stokesbury made a good point. Why do we have all these issues in Washington state and other states don't have them? If the tariffs were hurting, if it was tariffs, it would be every state, right? Mm-hmm. Some probably more than others that have more international trade or more reliant on it, but not to this extent. Mm-hmm. On UW's response to their researchers' assertion that I should be assassinated. Midnight, someone who makes remarks like that has no place in education. They have no place in a public institution at all. Election fraud case in Washington, Kobe Minor. Was this apartment manager a Democrat? I don't know. I'm going to make an assumption.
But
that's
true.
It doesn't matter.
It wouldn't matter to us.
But it doesn't matter because we're consistent. Somebody's saying that comments are being censored on YouTube. We don't censor comments.
Nope.
YouTube might censor comments if you put a swear word in there or something.
Now,
or if there's
really
spam.
Troll-like, yeah.
Well, no, not really.
No,
if you're spamming.
Yes.
If you're spamming the live comments, then that's a different issue. So this is a you problem, not an us problem.
Mm-mm.
I don't know. Miranda's probably going to be like, actually, I did block some comments, you know.
I mean, if your
who knows?
Language is obnoxious.
It really has to be severe for you to get banned mm-hmm. or silenced. One more here. Cryborn, thanks for the work you're doing. $9.99 super chat. I appreciate it. We're trying our best.
We're trying our best. Thanked by an inmate yesterday. We're getting letters from jail.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I should really send him a note back, but he's like, killed someone. We had to Google what inmate is messaging us. He killed someone, but he seems remorseful, but he really enjoys our show. And, so I was like, hey,
yeah, but
spread the good word.
He is probably in jail most of his life, if not all of it.
Prison, yes.
In prison. And he's still concerned about what's going on out here and appreciates what we're doing for the people out here.
Yeah, hey, we accept, you know, when I worked in TV especially, man, I got a lot of prison mail. Then they did the old-fashioned way, you know, pen and paper. Now they try to contact you electronically, but... Man, all the women specifically at the TV station, you know, because you're in prison, you got the TV.
That's the thing. I'm surprised he has full access to YouTube or I don't know, Patreon. I don't know what they have access to, but wow.
You know what I was always proud about? So there was this other very pretty anchor at the station I worked at, just like drop dead gorgeous. And she'd get a lot of prison mail too. Mm-hmm. But her prison mail would be like, send me nudes and you know, will you marry me, all this stuff. My prison mail was be like, can you help look into my investigate my case for me. I was like, wow, they appreciate me for my brain, or I wasn't attractive enough for them to want to ask me for nudes. But
you're attractive and useful,
you know, apparently not attractive enough for them to ask me for nudes, but that's fine. I appreciate being appreciated for my brain. Will somebody ask me for nudes, damn it?
Oh gosh, no, I'm don't kidding. Open that. Please,
I'm just kidding.
Don't do it.
Oh, I'm getting old. All right. It's nice to be wanted, you know, but the only person I need to be wanted by is my beloved husband. I'll send him nudes if he wants. Too much today? Am I on a bender today? All right, we'll get to our closing sanity check. First, if you're trying to save some money, there's a lot of increased costs on families. Looking at your insurance is a really good way to do it. I think a lot of us just set it and forget it and just assume that we've got the insurance that we need to cover us in the event that the unthinkable happens. But there's a few things. Our lives change and the insurance industry changes every single year. And so if you've got it on a set it and forget it or some sort of weird thing where you calculate and save me this much money in this amount of time, I promise you, you're going to want to take the First Mark challenge. Because one, you might be paying too much, or two, you could have this really cheap insurance you found on the internet that's not even going to do you any good in the event that you actually need it. So First Mark is going to make sure you get the best of both worlds, that you have the insurance you need, you're not paying for anything you don't need, and then you have it at the best price, and they don't charge you anything. You literally never pay First Mark anything for their services, including to do the First Mark challenge. So firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you, not the insurance companies. So they always have your best interest in mind. firstmarkinsurance.com. And with that, did you change our closing sanity check? Well, Jesus, now it's a total surprise to me. So we'll find out what it is together. Let's get to our closing sanity check. All right. President Trump was in Detroit today. He was giving a speech on the economy, and he said a couple interesting things about the nation's finances. You know, he said, oh, all this money that we have coming in from tariffs, maybe we could do away with the federal income tax. And now he's saying that if we eliminate fraud in our country, we wouldn't have any sort of budget problems at all.
It is them, but it's not just. There are many other places, many other people, the whole country. If we stop this fraud, this massive fraud, we're going to have a balanced budget. That's how much money you're talking. We'll have a balanced budget without all the growth I'm talking about. And then you add the growth, we got one hell of a country.
Yeah, I'm not sure if that's true, but I don't think eliminating all the fraud or most of the fraud is a bad idea at
Apparently,
all.
Elon confirmed this by saying there's about $1 trillion in fraud. So that would help us all.
Well, you'd have to claw back the fraud, right? You'd have to get the money back, which probably isn't going to happen. But if you can stop fraud moving forward, then that's money that's not being spent on things it shouldn't be spent on. So we got to eliminate the fraud, claw back what we can, and then change our policies and
procedures
moving forward.
And then the Dems could have their boob jobs for President
Knights. And then, you know what? I'll make you a deal. You eliminate all the federal fraud. You eliminate the child care fraud. I won't say another word about you using taxpayer funds to fund boob jobs for prison inmates. That has been our closing sanity check. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much. I think I'm sleepless today. That's why I'm talking about nudes and boob jobs.
Up all night worrying about your
dog. My poor dog was all drugged up, getting ready for her surgery. Looked so sad and defeated.
She did.
She tore a little doggy ACL. so she's going to be sad for a month, can't do anything. So I'm just, I didn't get any sleep last night is what I'm trying to say. Anyway, I promise we're professionals, so support our show for $5 a month. UndividedPod.com, UndividedPod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. See you tomorrow.